Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Impact Vest podcast, transformative global innovation in a new era of impact. I'm Aisha Williams, the founder and CEO of Impact Vest, and along with our guest host, we aim to inspire and motivate towards collective positive global impact to solve our world's most pressing challenges in sustainability. With each episode, we will engage in insightful conversations with global changemakers, visionaries, and sustainability activists who wish to build a more sustainable and resilient future. Join us now as we create the future of impact.
Welcome, everyone, to our Q3 roundtable. It's great to hear from you all again, and thanks for following our podcast. I'm here with three great entrepreneurs that I'm very inspired by. And in this roundtable, we're speaking about strategic impact, especially looking at the rest of 2024. So how can we position our companies to achieve returns, but also achieve the highest amount of positive impact that we can? So I'm glad to go around our roundtable and have everyone introduce themselves. I will start with you, Saxon.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. I love being a part of this alliance. I'm Saxon Knight, the founder of House of Saxons, which is an organization that focuses on empowering trauma survivors, mostly female survivors of trauma, to launch careers through the acquisition of very basic but very applicable business skills. So basically trying to break the re-exploitation cycle that affects many, many survivors of trauma who don't have a financially viable alternative to a life of exploitation. And so the dream, the idea, the vision is really to, as I said, empower these individuals with highly transferable business skills. My background is actually cybersecurity. I'm a cybersecurity and AI executive, I guess. I've worked in social media, consulting, finance for many years. And I think being a woman in predominantly male-dominated industries for literally my entire career has given me a real passion for the underserved and the unseen population. So that's kind of why I started what I started.
That is perfect, Saxon. And I'm definitely very inspired by your work. So thank you for being here on our roundtable. And next I'll go to Tanner.
Awesome. Hi, everyone. I'm Tanner Snyder, and I lead investment strategy at Goldleaf Farming. We are a hybrid investment firm and farming company that provides private investors, many high net worth individuals, family offices, small institutions, with access to specialty crop farmland investments, primarily almonds and pistachios in our case. We own and sustainably operate about 12,000 acres of orchards in California and Arizona, and look to, you know, like you mentioned earlier, really maximize returns, but also doing so in a way that cares for our people and our planet. A little bit on me, I grew up on a small farm in Indiana, so beef cattle and row crops rather than tree crops like I work with now. But grew up on a farm, did a fair amount of work in agriculture while I was at McKinsey & Company as a consultant, and then met up with Jack and Brandon, the co-founders of Goldleaf, a couple of years ago, and have been in the farmland space ever since.
Perfect. Yes. And thank you also for being here. I think your insights in your space are going to be really fascinating for us to discuss. And lastly, I'll come to you, Obed.
Thank you. So my name's Obed Aparicio Morales. I am the co-CFO and co-COO for the Hispanic Social Assembly, but I got to revise my title as Chief Operating Financial Officer, aka the coffee of the company, because that's my nickname that I was given. But particularly what the HSA Corporation does is we manage about 60 different agriculture projects, ranging from Mexico all the way to Brazil. And we touch a variety of different products such as fresh fruits, dry fruits, vegetables, and, you know, dry packaging. The reason behind the HSA Corporation is essentially to just start combating unfair trade practices that corporations have done in Latin America, making sure people get paid what they put in, what they work for. And also we're looking to now start combating the aspects of child labor, modern day human trafficking, and current what we call modern slavery. in a sort of sense. And that's our goal, is mission is vision, is to just make sure people get paid what they work for fairly.
Yeah, and definitely what I think is so interesting across all of your industries and companies, there's such a focus on helping people in society and to be able to make this kind of the core focus of your vision. Thank you, Obed, for being here in our roundtable. So as we look forward here, the next half of the year in 2024, what are the key points or key aspects of strategic impact that you think are the most important in your own industries that you feel may be overlooked as you talk to investors, as you talk to other stakeholders, but are really important for you as you drive your businesses forward? Yeah, and I'll go to you, Saxon.
Okay. I think, like full honesty, I've had a really difficult time finding strategic investors. And I think one of the things that I have learned kind of the hard way is that the anti-trafficking space is a tough pill to swallow. It's not fun. It's not comfortable. So I think one of the big kind of, if I could do it all over again, moments for me in looking at strategic investment is really being able to create sort of a minimum viable product that tells a great story. Because I feel like most of the community at large feels like the anti-trafficking and trying to kind of change that tide or turn that tide is so overwhelming that I think being able to tell some really good news stories and not waiting until you have sort of the perfect program, the perfect setup, the right staff, et cetera. I think one of the things that I've learned through this experience is finding that MVP and getting to it quickly, because that really does kind of attract the next round.
Yes, and that's also something I think we all want, to get to that perfect product or pitch or service. But something you mentioned, Saxon, was what is really interesting, especially in impact and sustainability, that often we're speaking about topics that may be difficult for others to speak about in a public forum, but are very important, like your work, highly important to draw attention and draw awareness from investors towards this subject, but it's difficult for people to talk about and speak about. And I wonder, Obed, have you encountered something similar as Saxon has about when you're speaking with stakeholders and investors, do they want to speak about being able to assist farmers? Do they want to speak about these topics?
Well, it's a Hail Mary of a conversation, because one, as Saxon probably knows, when you bring up the topic, you don't know what the reaction is going to be with them, right? Because some people kind of say, in particular, for example, we had a specific business here that's a big, very big chain of coffee, for example. When we pointed out where they're originating their coffee from, they got very upset, right? Because they don't want to think, oh, my business is causing to misery, because for them, it's kind of like, well, we just look at the numbers, right? We don't look at the window behind on the other side. You know, it might be see-through, but, you know, we tend to not look inside, and that's kind of how they operate. So what we shifted when that conversation was saying, hey, you know, if it's just the numbers, what is it that you need so you can have more of a less moral gray area and, you know, do the right thing for the people that you're buying from, as opposed to just thinking about numbers, right? Because at the end of the day, like people say, it's easy to be generous with someone else's funds. And that's where you want to know where your boundary is. And it's just, that's where the main challenge is. You don't want to shame, but you also just want to make people aware.
Right. And then this process of making people aware, I'll go to you, Tanner, because I believe that you published some white papers. And how was this process for you and your company of making others aware of the work that you're doing?
Yeah, good question. You know, I think it's sometimes a real challenge for us to be able to share the message in a way, because I think a lot of people get worried about, you know, if you do have a positive impact on the world, you know, many investors Actually, we'll, you know, there's certainly a great group of maybe first movers in the sort of impact investing space. But there are also folks that will hear the word impact or sustainability or ESG and automatically assume that that means an investment with concessionary returns. And so I think it's important to be able to, you know, actually cut through that and show with real examples that in our space within farmland, it's really possible to both drive strong returns and do things that are impactful in taking care of our people and our planet. And so just a couple of examples of the of those things and things that we've highlighted in some of the white papers and other media that we've put out. You know, one is water usage. I think there's a real misconception that farmers are wasteful with water and maybe even purposefully so. But that actually just doesn't make sense, especially in areas that are, you know, water stressed or limited, because water ultimately has a cost. Either you're paying for the water itself in some cases, or you're paying, you know, electricity and energy costs to pump that water. And so there's actually, you know, both an economic and an environmental incentive to minimize your water usage. And that's something that we utilize a lot of technology and spend a lot of resources on understanding how we can make our water usage as efficient as possible. And then another example is, you know, converting acreage to organic, for instance. We're able to go organic, which is better for the planet, especially with, you know, the reduced chemical usage. It's better for water health, for pollinator health, for human health, really. And at the same time, many organic crops receive a significant price premium. And so it's another area where investing in sustainability can actually drive more positive returns. We actually see the potential to drive, you know, roughly 80% higher cash flow potential in organic almonds relative to conventional almonds. Now that moves around sometimes, but there is a lot better potential there. So I think these are just a couple of examples, and you really have to show that it's not, you know, impact or returns. It can be both.
Right. And so for companies in the sustainability and impact space, it's what we have this double mandate, right? That you have to show the positive impact and show that you can make the return for your investors while making an impact. As we see the landscape going forward, do you all feel like it will be easier to have these conversations about how important it is to have strategic impact? So we have our impact KPIs, but it's understood that we are making the return alongside hitting the impact KPIs. Do you feel like the landscape, that there'll be more stakeholders and more investors who understand that there doesn't have to be a trade-off? And I'll go back to you, Saxon.
Yes, I hope so. I think the conversations are absolutely happening about the right topics at the right time. But I also think, you know, from a corporate perspective, like I just don't see the impact investing happening quite as quickly as I do in the VC and hedge fund community. It just seems slower. And I feel like the DEI and ESG conversations are a little bit prescriptive still. I think one of the things that really drives these conversations is if we sort of are coming at it from like a cultural moment. And if the community writ large is wanting to see investments in, you know, to Tanner's point about, you know, we can go organic or we can go conventional. If, you know, the consensus writ large in the greater community says, well, why would we do conventional? We can see all these other benefits for organic. So I do think that it's not just up to the investment community. I do think that there needs to be sort of a larger conversation where, as a community, as a culture, we're saying we're committed to investing our money and our resources in things that we see having three, four generations, you know, two generations of impact, and sort of this more sustainable way to invest. I think a lot of you know, I'm in the cybersecurity world. And so I see all of this investment in AI solutions. And, you know, 75% of these solutions won't be around a year from now. And so I sort of think about that versus what we're talking about, where we want to be investing in intergenerational change. We want to be investing in something that's going to make the world look different for our kids than it did for us. But I think putting all of that on the investor is a lot. I think it needs to also come from sort of this crowdsourced commitment, I would say.
Right. And it doesn't make it easy when there are kind of shiny new objects as AI and tech, right? And so we have to kind of fight through the conversation to state that we are here in the sustainability industry, and it's still very important to allocate towards these sectors. But you are correct, Saxon. I think to place it all on the investor is a lot for them to be able to digest, almost in terms of impact and returns, when there are many conventional investments that are performing better. And that's something that is a conversation also in the impact industry that we have to tackle. As the landscape becomes more of integrating impact into wider investment frameworks, it becomes easier to actually have these conversations rather than having impact as a separate asset class almost, right? And so that's what we see today. And yeah. Going to you, Obed, in terms of really working in the intersection and having to speak to many different stakeholders, how do you communicate strategic impact to such a wide variety of stakeholders?
So that conversation, you know, it's driven particularly within whatever economy that stakeholder would be. So for our members that are in the U.S. branch, for example, they only saw the urgency to double their investment with the HSA only and only when they saw the border crisis. They only see, when they start seeing the humanity behind everything, they say, okay, well, what was the numbers? When we explain to them, you know, 70% of the goods of the agriculture ecosystem of Latin America, 70% reflects child labor, child slavery, inhumane work practices, exploitative measures, et cetera, et cetera. You break down the numbers and show them the reports. And then they say, well, you know, it's no wonder people are coming here. And you kind of to align what's going on in the world. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, these aren't new numbers. That's the sad thing. They were just been drastically underreported 20, 30, 40, 50 plus years. And, you know, at the end of the day, like we sell people, cheap goods come at a more inexpensive price later, right? The bill comes due one way, shape or form. And we're seeing it now. So when we say we don't know, we want to create a sustainable system where we can, you know, give you good returns on your funds, but on the back burner on it, this is really what you're doing is you're starting to establish those relationships, those securities, you know, because people tend to stay where they have more comfort. And if we create that comfort back home, then, you know, you start making it a choice to come to America, not a mandatory life or death, you know, situation.
Right. And so it's really knowing the perspective of the stakeholders that you're speaking to and being able to anticipate how they're going to react to those conversations. Right? And Tanner, for you, how do you manage it? Being able to communicate strategic impact and that there doesn't have to be a trade-off between impact and returns to your stakeholders.
Yeah, you know, I think that it really comes back to, you know, my earlier answer around providing the examples of the ways in which we can both drive strong returns and have a positive impact. So another one, you know, going off of Obed's point around labor, one thing that we do is we pay living wages to all of our farm workers. So we actually operate the farms that we own. We pay living wages. We provide fully covered health insurance for our farm operators and their families, which is pretty unheard of in agriculture. And then they all have an equity stake in the farms that they work on. Another thing that's basically unheard of in agriculture, especially for the hourly labor force. And so, you know, we do that because we want to be able to have the best people to be able to do the hard things like transition to organic, implement regenerative practices, utilize ag tech to, you know, minimize water usage and increase efficiency. And so by having those great people, we can do those hard things and therefore drive better returns. And we keep those people for a lot longer. We have, you know, less than a third of the average industry turnover for agriculture because we actually take care of our people and, you know, and they want to work for us. So I think that that's another example more on the people side. And when we talk about all of these things and can show the ROI, it really makes a big difference in being able to communicate to stakeholders the value of the things that we're doing that also are really positive from an ESG standpoint.
Right. And as we come to the end of our roundtable time has really flown here. We could just keep discussing. What is your parting message to our listeners, to investors who may not be allocated in impact in sustainable firms, but who are interested in it, who would very much like to participate in what all you are doing in terms of helping society, helping the environment to really create a better world? What would you say to those investors who are ready to allocate? They've been on the sidelines, but they really want to diversify their portfolio into impact. And I'll go to you, Saxon.
Okay. I think, you know, putting myself in an investor's shoes, there's so many different possibilities and companies and, you know, founders to choose from. I think if it were me, I'd be overwhelmed. And I think when looking at this space, I guess the litmus test for me, if I was investing in this space, would be, am I putting my dollars towards something, kind of to my point earlier, that's catalyzing intergenerational change? And I think that's so important because, you know, if you think about, you know, growing plants, right, you can plant a seed and harvest every single year, or you have to replant. And I feel like for an investor, building a portfolio of investments and having a strategy that's really focused on long-term change and not just sort of micro changes, but really focusing on the macro issues, I think that's a really good, you know, again, from my perspective on the other side of the table, I think that's a great strategy to make sure that you're not just throwing good money after bad, that you're really investing in something that is going to not only give you a return over, you know, not just a year or 2 years or 5 years, but really you're looking at decades of return, because you've started this flywheel effect where you've given yourself to, you know, you've given this investment to a company or a startup or a founder now, and you know that 10, 20, 30 years from now, I think all three of us here are focused on issues that are going to be important in the next generation. And so I think that's probably what I would say to an investor.
Right. Yeah, that's perfect. Right. It's really thinking about the generational wealth and opportunities that we can create through impact. And what do you think, Obed, in terms of how we can position investors who may be on the sidelines about impact to really participate in the impact economy?
Well, like I've mentioned before, it's a very personal choice to the right investor, right? You know, it depends on where their priorities are, particularly, you know, not everyone's going to invest in a portfolio that isn't high yield return, right? Because there are some folks who see that and they look at your portfolio performance and they say, well, you know, you're giving me 18, but the other person giving me 22. So this is, you know, I can't fight that. But the only thing I will say to some investors is, you know, what is it that you are investing in truly, right? Is it just the numbers, right? What is it that you're trying to change? What is it that you hope for the future? You know, and the best way that I always ask people is, if you had to see what we're doing for Latin America, for example, and, you know, you saw those work conditions, those trade practices being done here in your homeland, how would you feel about it? You would do everything in your power to change it, right? And we want to emphasize that, you know, humanity doesn't have borders. It doesn't have a language. we all have, you know, we are combined by the things we talk to, which is, you know, we all need to eat, we all need to drink water at the end of the day. And that's what unites us really as people. So if you want to invest in that, in the things that, you know, we all have in common that we need to eat, then by all means, you know, we can definitely see a good way to give you good returns, but give you a good way to give back to others as well.
And lastly, Tanner, how would you communicate the importance of strategic impact to investors who may not be allocated towards it and who may be still on the fence, right, about the trade-offs?
Yeah, sure. Well, I would actually, you know, frame it a little bit differently. I think farmland is a really good stepping stone into impact because there aren't a lot of trade-offs. As I've mentioned in many of my examples today, the things that we want to do to drive impact and care for our people and planet on the farms are actually the things that make us economically better off and still able to drive strong returns. At Goldleaf, our core fund targets 13 to 18% pre-tax net IRR. And so there really aren't many trade-offs. You don't see a lot of real estate, especially farmland, doing that kind of returns. But because of the crops that we're focused on in almonds and pistachios, which are higher value crops, we're still able to do the really positive things and drive strong returns. Farmland has been one of the most stable asset classes over the last 70 years, outperforming most of other sub-asset classes within real estate. And so I just think it's honestly a very good place or stepping stone for investors who are thinking about getting into impact investing to take a look. And we would certainly be happy to talk to any folks that are interested in taking a look. And you can find out more about us on our website, which is goldleaf.ag.
Perfect. Thank you all for attending our roundtable today. I have to say, I'm so inspired by our discussion and the insights that you shared. This conversation has been truly impactful for me, and I know for our audience as well. So thanks to all of you, and I hope to see you in our future roundtables.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to the ImpactVest podcast, transformative global innovation in a new era of impact. Join us next week for another episode and become part of our ImpactVest newsletter community, where you will receive all of the latest updates about our work in this new era of innovative impact finance. See you next week as we create the future of finance at ImpactVest.